Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 5th of March. Jason Edward Harrington is a former TSA agent, and he's the author of a piece that's been picked up all over and much talked about in Politico magazine, Dear America, I Saw You Naked, and Yes, We Were Laughing. He was looking for a job because he had to pay his way through school, and the TSA's callback was the first one that he received. He was wanting to work toward a degree in creative writing. This was in Chicago at O'Hare Airport, and he says in his piece, I hated it. It was a job that had me patting down the crotches of children, the elderly, and even infants. As part of the post-9/11 airport security show, I confiscated jars of homemade apple butter on the pretense they could pose threats to national security, even required to confiscate nail clippers from airline pilots, the implied logic being that pilots could use the nail clippers to hijack the very planes that they were flying. He is our guest this hour, and we'll be welcoming phone calls. Jason will talk about all that he saw and what steps may be overboard in terms of keeping us secure. And also, we'll talk about what may be necessary to keep us secure during the course of this hour. I'm sure that many of you listening have had your own experiences with security at airports, and we welcome your phone calls. And you can also answer the question, what do we need at airports in order to be secure? Have we gone overboard with what is required? Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and you can also find us on Twitter at K Dunn Show. Jason Edward Harrington, hello. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
So you wouldn't have had all of this story, all of this attention, if TSA hadn't been the first one to call you back, right?
That is very true. I was just thinking about that last night. That's true.
Were you? And it kind of helped because now you're doing creative writing, and I'm sure it's helped your career. Did you think when you took the job, I have misgivings about this, or did the misgivings come once you got in the whole system?
Yeah, the misgivings came once I got in the whole system. I was just actually talking to somebody about this the other day, and they said to me, like, how could you have not known what the TSA was about, given that they're in the media so much? But actually, I applied in late 2004, TSA was only 2 years old at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Back then, I really hadn't heard much about the TSA at all. There hadn't been too much time for anti-TSA sentiment to be in the media. I really didn't know what I was getting into. It took about a year before I kind of realized what everything was about.
What kind of background check did they give you, Jason, to become a TSA agent?
That's a good question. They have you fill out what's called an SF-50 form, which basically, not much of a background check at all. They call maybe a couple. You get to dictate who they call in order to ask about you. So I literally just, like, had them call one of my friends from college. They called him and said, hey, you know, a decent stand-up guy. And, of course, my friend said, yeah. Back then, it was really sloppy, their background investigations. And there were a lot of people whose background checks were actually never even checked in the early days of TSA up until very recently, actually. So really, there really wasn't much of a background check for maybe the first 10 years of TSA.
Mm-hmm. One of the more, well, the whole article is interesting, but all you worked, evidently, you had a little piece of paper that was taped to the back of your TSA badges that had a list of those people from certain countries. I think there were 12 countries that were automatically searched. Is that right?
Yeah, that's true. Up until 2010, about, there was what was called a selectee list, which was a list of 12 nations that automatically triggered enhanced screening for a passenger. So if they happened to be a passenger from Syria, Algeria, Afghanistan, mostly Middle Eastern countries, they were automatically subjected to a sort of an enhanced search regardless of who they are or who they were.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, you make note of the fact that two countries, Pakistan and Saudi Arabia, were not on the list.
Yeah. I mean, it was all, you know, the list was made for diplomatic reasons, for political reasons, and the whole thing was a very bad idea because in practice it ended up being a whole lot of TSA officers knowing that for the most part the list were Middle Eastern countries. So in many cases, officers just ended up screening Middle Eastern passengers willy-nilly without even caring about where they were from.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it was a really bad idea from the beginning.
Tell me when we started getting and when we stopped getting and how TSA agents responded to these full-body scanners. These were expensive babies, weren't they?
Yeah. The first full-body scanners, they were nude scanners is what they were people called them. Radiation, they used radiation, and we were able to see nude images of the passengers from a remote location. They didn't really work very well, and that became apparent pretty quickly. The people who trained us on the scanners told us almost right off the bat that the things were very poor at detecting metal, which meant that people could bring guns to an airport through those scanners, and we wouldn't be able to see guns.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean, the first day of training, this is pretty much what we're told, and it became obvious that, you know, that trainer was correct. A lot of people were correct in warning us that the scanners didn't work. And, yeah, so we discovered that they were pretty ineffective, ridiculously slow, very expensive, obviously. The media found out how much they cost pretty quickly. So they were basically just a big waste of money and time. And everybody at TSA knew it, almost everybody, but nobody said anything about it.
And the title of your article is Dear America, I Saw You Naked, and Yes, We Were Laughing. Who was laughing?
That's a good question, too. A lot of people took to sort of telling jokes about, making jokes about passengers, overweight people who genitalia size, making jokes about genitalia size.
Really?
Yeah. This of course, is the most sensational part of the story, but it's actually a very small portion of what the many hundreds of thousands of words I've written on my blog. Like, this is been a very small section, but of course it got picked up as being the most sensational part.
Right.
From almost from day one. But I mean, as you would almost expect with a lot of people were straight out of high school in these little rooms looking at nude images of
right.
the public. These weren't like doctors, you know, very professional people who were just looking with cold analytical eyes at nude images. These were, you know, kids fresh out of high school. So, yeah, there was a pretty big culture of just laughter and joking about things such as that.
Well, it's an important part of the story because $150,000 for one of these machines, and they weren't able to detect the very things that we would hope they could detect to keep somebody from getting on an airplane with either a gun or plastic explosives in their underwear.
Yeah, I mean, that was the most absurd part of my 6 years at TSA was just working these machines. It was something straight out of Catch 22, like, you know, the novel Catch 22 or any like brilliant piece of absurd comedy, really, where, you know, we're working these ridiculous machines that can do anything or can do a lot of things, but like one of the few things that they can't do or one of the things they can't do is detect guns, explosives, or
right.
anything that that they should really be doing.
Yeah. I wasn't aware of these boarding pass. It's an SSSS stamp that's put on certain boarding passes. What are those?
Oh, yeah. Well, originally, as I said, with the 12 nations that got enhanced screening, anybody who gets enhanced screening, you can tell because almost always you'll have four S's on your ticket. I don't know if you knew that.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, a lot of frequent flyers pick up on it just because, you know, they see so many boarding passes. But, yeah, if you have the four S's on your ticket, that means you've been selected for enhanced screening. There's a large number of reasons for that to come about. Like I said, in the old days, if you were from or in 2009, let's just say, if you were from one of 12 countries, you would automatically have those S's. These days, let's say you buy a one-way ticket to anywhere, often the airlines will give you enhanced green because, hey, why is this person buying just a one-way ticket?
Mm-hmm.
There's also just sort of inscrutable reasons that nobody, mysterious reasons that pop up that nobody really ever finds out as to why people get the 4Ss.
What about screening for bags? I'm sure that you have seen some amazing things that set off concern when your bag goes through that X-ray machine or whatever the heck it's called. What would set it off? And you must have been kind of embarrassed by some of what you found in some people's bags, weren't you?
I mean, yeah, that's one of the most... I could write a book, and I actually am writing a book. You could write a whole book about just the things that we would find in people's bags. I guess, like, the most... If I had to give one piece of wisdom to people, which a lot of the public has heard of this in some way or another, it's that cheese looks exactly like a very bad thing on an X-ray screen, like a class of explosives.
Oh.
So if you have cheese in your luggage, it is almost certainly... Your bag will almost certainly be pulled aside for screening. But, other than that, then, yeah, I mean, we saw, I mean, sex toys, lots of sex toys, just about anything you could imagine. At one point, somebody brought a fully disassembled motorcycle.
Oh, no. Oh, my gosh.
Like, tried to bring it through with the gas tank and with fuel inside of it.
Too. Oh, my goodness.
Through International Terminal 5 in Chicago O'Hare on his way to Mexico. So, because of the gasoline, obviously, that whole thing was no-go. But, we've seen all sorts of, live animals like snakes.
Huh?
People have tried to bring baby pythons, exotic pets through, all sorts of insane things. You get your occasional gun. Very rare, but, yeah, an occasional gun shows up.
Ooh, what would you do if you found a python?
I never found one, but I believe. Oh yeah, what happened is in one case, somebody actually had a bag of pythons taped to his body because he was illegally trying to bring exotic pets internationally. They were very rare.
Right.
Pets of pythons. Yeah, so it ended up being a call. It ended up with him being detained and sort of questioned as to why he's trying to smuggle something through security.
Yeah.
Yeah, you saw a lot of things like that.
I know that you mentioned a bottle of champagne that troops who were coming back from Afghanistan, they were coming home, and there was going to be a celebration, and you had to take away the bottle of champagne from someone who had lost his legs in fighting. Is that overly concerned about liquids on planes? Was there a reason for that, or did you think that was just ridiculous?
I mean, yeah, the TSA still has the ban on liquids in place, which is pretty absurd. They've actually, there have been rumors that they're going to lift it, and I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if within the next couple of years, hopefully, they finally pretty much lift it, but it's still on now. It's mostly a silly rule where any liquid larger than 3.4 ounces can't go through security. So one day I'm working at O'Hare, and a group of Marines comes through, and somebody says, oh, bag check on one of the Marines' bags. It's a bottle of champagne, and it turns out to be a bottle of celebration champagne for one of the Marines who'd lost his legs fighting in Fallujah, I believe.
Mm.
So then I and everybody else was in the position of having to tell this group of Marines and this guy who, you know, lost his legs fighting for America that you can't have your champagne because due to national security concerns. Which, yeah, that was one of the most absurd situations I ever faced at the TSA. And, I mean, almost everybody who was on the checkpoint that day just realized this is just silly and this is kind of wrong almost.
Mm-hmm.
Just really absurd, and everybody really felt bad. But, I mean, that's bureaucracy and absurd rules. You get put in a lot of positions like that when it comes to bureaucracy.
Were there some rules that you thought were really good ones and you were wholeheartedly happy to endorse because you thought they would make us more secure, Jason?
God, I wish I could say yes. I would say the best thing... And this is one thing that the TSA is sort of moving toward or trying to move toward is giving officers or screeners discretion to use common sense, in other words.
Uh-huh.
So I would say that the best thing I ever heard at TSA and the most heartening thing that I would hear occasionally is that we are trying to move toward allowing screeners to use common sense at the airport. And usually those directives would come down, a directive saying that you are officially allowed to use common sense from this day forth.
Right.
Everyone would get excited and say, we can use common sense. We can use our best discretion, it says right here in this directive. But within a couple weeks, basically, in practice, that just gets thrown out the window as people realize that if you use common sense, it brings a level of, what's the word I'm looking for? A level of, you have to, accountability. It brings accountability, common sense, using common sense as an airport security screener brings accountability upon you, obviously, because if you use your discretion and it's a bad call, the TSA system will punish you pretty severely.
Mm-hmm.
So inevitably, people just stopped using common sense every time we were told we could use common sense.
We're going to welcome phone calls for you, and we'll take them in a moment. Our guest is Jason Edward Harrington. He, for several years, was a TSA officer. He wrote, we'll get into this story, piece to the New York Times, and he was called into his superior to answer to why he had done that. Ultimately, he wound up doing a blog about this, and he can also tell the story of how it went viral. So he's talking now about some of the concerns that he had as an agent, some of the laws that seemed to be willy-nilly and maybe a waste of our money, and simultaneously, are there other things that TSA agents were doing or security was doing at airports that has made us safer? So he's with us this hour. Jason Edward Harrington is a writer. He's a McSweeney's contributor and a blogger and is now working on a novel that is based on his time at the TSA. His blog is takingsenseaway.wordpress.com, and he's also on Twitter at Jason Harrington, replacing the O's with zeros. So here's how you reach us, 800-486-8655. Obviously, the question to you is the experiences you may have had. Do you think that we've gone overboard with our security? Are there measures that are particularly effective? Are others just put in place because we have faced a threat? How do we handle security at airports? Are we safer because of TSA agents, or is some of this just goofy? Here's the number, 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. And we're on Twitter, @KDunnShow. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Jason Edward Harrington, former TSA officer, author of a piece in Politico magazine a couple weeks ago, Dear America, I Saw You Naked, and Yes, We Were Laughing. Irene and Phillips, our first caller. Hello, Irene.
Yes, hi, Kathleen and Jason. I had to laugh a few minutes ago when I heard Jason's talk about cheese, bringing cheese into your luggage.
Right.
And you know what good old Wisconsin cheese curds are. Well, my son teaches in northern Nevada. All of his fellow teachers wanted cheese curds, so I brought 31-pound bags of cheese curds. of course, when I reached my destination and opened up my travel bag, there was a little note from the TSA saying, your bag has been checked. And I counted every bag, and all the bags were there, but I'm sure they thought it was drugs or explosives or something, but it was good old Wisconsin cheese curds.
Oh, you were lucky they didn't take them, Irene. Somebody knew cheese curds.
I thought one or two might be gone.
I would have thought, considering what you just said, Jason, that all of them might be gone.
Yeah, I mean, as far as luggage screening, in the news, every couple months there's some news about something going wrong.
Yeah. Irene, are you still there? I wonder if she had to have a conversation. And I'm wondering if conversations work. Would the TSA agent say to her, Irene, what is this? And would she have to, in order to indicate that she was an honest woman, say, I'm going to visit my son who's a teacher, and they asked for cheese curds, and then somebody would believe her? Would it go that far?
I mean, the TSA would, we'd see it all day long, especially with cheese. So the TSA say, what do you have in here? She'd say, cheese, and then almost it would be an instantaneous, oh, okay. But they would look at it, test it, to make sure it's not, explosives, disguised as cheese, and then she'd be on her way.
Yeah. Irene, thanks for the call. Nathan in Eau Claire, hi.
Hello, how are you today?
All right, Nathan, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. I am a veteran of Iraq in 2003. I was a Marine infantryman who invaded. I've seen all kinds of horrible explosions, battles everywhere. And I think that the one thing we need to think about and say here is that since September 11th, we have had no terrorist attacks on the continental or islands of the United States of America. So obviously what we're doing there, some people might think it's too much, but it's saving American life. And your guest wants people who he's saying, look, America, we're laughing at you. He wants to give these people more leniency in decision-making. He wants to give the 20-year-olds and the 21-year-olds that he himself admits have no maturity, he wants to give them delegation of authority. To me, it's ridiculous.
Jason.
Yeah.
You want to respond?
Oh, no. Actually, I don't want to give more authority to the TSA screeners. I wrote to the New York Times saying that I felt that's what the TSA should do in 2010, and I've since come to regret it greatly. I think my solution, or the best solution I can come up with, is that there should be one person on every TSA checkpoint who is officially allowed to use common sense and to make discretion calls. So, for instance, if a Marine came through with a bottle of champagne, a TSA supervisor or somebody allowed to make a judgment call could come over, look at the situation, look at the Marine, look at the champagne, and say, this is not a threat. We don't have to take this soldier's champagne.
Mm.
That's the best compromise I've been able to imagine.
Mm-hmm. And what about his point that we haven't had any major attack? Obviously, we had the shoe bomber. Now we take our shoes off, at least some people do. And we had the underwear bomber. And so we got the full body scanners. Now we don't have those anymore. His point would indicate that it's because of the measures that you had to put into implementation that we haven't had incidents.
Yeah, I think that's a classic case of confusing correlation for causality. The biggest thing that changed after 9/11 as far as air security goes was the reinforcement of the cockpit doors in airplanes and the passengers' willingness to fight back.
Mm-hmm.
After 9/11, passengers decided, I mean, instantly, as we saw, you know, with the Shanksville flight, passengers instantly decided they weren't going to sit back and, you know, just take it as hijackers or terrorists tried to carry out plans. With this shoe bomber and the underwear bomber, as you can see in both those cases, both those attempted terrorist attacks, both those individuals made it through security successfully. They beat the airline security in place at the time.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that stopped them was passengers literally tackling them and holding them down for the rest of the flight. So the question is it all the extra, you know, security measures that have been put into place, or is it simply the passengers' willingness to fight back, people's awareness of, you know, watching their fellow, you know, passengers and keeping an eye out on what they're doing, the reinforcement of the cockpit door. The question is how much of the security that has been implemented is really necessary to strike that balance of safety and, you know, common sense and personal, you know, rights.
Right. Let's go to Bob in Middleton. Hi, Bob.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm just listening to Jason, and I'm nodding my head as he speaks. I had the opportunity to work for a number of years in Washington after 9/11, advocating for the Airline Pilot Association. And so much of what Jason holds is true. They try to screen so many things, they dilute their screening. And just like Jason said, the individual screeners are given no discretion. And that, I think, not providing them with some degree of judgment to determine what's a risk and what isn't, really does limit the ability for us to screen effectively.
Mm. And would this be the considered opinion of the pilot association, the airline pilot?
Yes, matter of fact, the airline pilot association advocates constantly to have screening revised.
Oh, that's interesting.
To reflect issues that we feel are a concern. But oftentimes, I feel sorry for our screeners who really do a magnificent job. But with the constraints they have, their work becomes more difficult. And Jason probably is nodding his head as I say that.
Yeah. And, yeah. And Bob, what do you think is of concern?
What I would like to do, if I had my way, and a lot of other pilots feel this way, is we'd like to see the prohibited items list shrink down to something smaller that really does reflect the risks that are out there, and also to allow them to do what they're starting to do, which is behavioral screening. They can begin to assess the individuals that really do pose more of a threat based not on how they walk or how they look, but, you know, their history. Your credit card companies know far more about you than the screeners at the gate oftentimes. And, Jason, you feel free to disagree with me if you think I'm wrong on that, but the poor screeners, they end up trying to find things or look at things, and there's so many things for them to look at, it becomes a challenge in the short time they have.
Oh, interesting. Jason.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I agree with so much of that. I'm not sure exactly the entire looking into people's credit card histories. I mean, yeah, that's been almost scientifically proven to provide a lot more, you know, information to be a better indicator than just looking at people on an individual basis. But, I mean, I totally agree with some amount of discretion should definitely be granted to somebody on a TSA checkpoint. I'm comfortable in saying that, and that's what I definitely believe. I used to think that every single TSA screener should have the ability to use common sense, but I realized quickly in practice that that would mean, quite frankly, I had a lot of coworkers who were not the kind of people. I had a lot of great, amazing coworkers, very intelligent people, great. You would want them to use common sense because they would make the right call almost every time. But on the flip side of that, I also had some coworkers who you probably wouldn't want to have the, you know, judgment power to say whether you miss your flight or don't because of their suspicions. So it's a tricky balance, but I think that there should be someone on a TSA checkpoint with the power to use common sense. Mm. So, you know, like behavior screening, like I didn't catch his name. I'm sorry. But,
Bob. His name is Bob.
But yeah. Like Bob said, behavior screening, somebody should, on the checkpoint, should be able to officially use behavior screening in order to make judgment calls.
Yeah. And Bob, let me ask you, does the Pilot Association have any sway when it comes to determining what these measures will be? Do you talk to people who are making the decisions?
Oh, yes. I wouldn't call it as far as advocacy goes, but we have a good relationship with the Transportation Security Administration, the Armed Pilot Program, the Federal Flight Deck Officer Program. There's over 10,000 armed pilots. They work with the TSA. We liaison with them as a what they call stakeholder because we all share in the risk of the threat that's out there to airline and aviation safety and security. Mm-hmm. So we do have a relationship. But it's, once again, we wish it was better. Oftentimes they come to us and they don't say, this is what we're thinking about doing, what do you think? They come and say, this is what we're going to do, and so how do you feel about it after they're executing the policy change? And that's kind of frustrating that we don't get into the loop to help them achieve the goal, but perhaps in a more passenger and crew member friendly manner.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Bob. I'm glad you were listening.
Thank you.
Yeah,
have a great day.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Bob.
Let's go next to Jenny in Eau Claire. Hi, Jenny.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thanks.
And I have a couple of thoughts regarding this. The first one is that, while I'm listening to this, I'm really drawn in, and it's very appealing to me. But yet, at the same time, there's a portion of me that is very angry and that feels a little taken aback. I mean, doctors and lawyers and nurses and all these other people have a professional courtesy to not be able to talk about their people and their clients and their stories. And I really feel like it's an invasion of privacy to have somebody talking about and laughing about people who are trying to travel and do a day-to-day type activity on a regular basis. And then the other thing I wanted to mention is that I have worked in a previous life as a inspector for the state of Wisconsin in the food industry. And while professional courtesy and while it is nice to be able to use common sense in those type of approaches, especially when you're dealing with people that find inspections and things like that funny, you really can't offer any sort of deviations from a black and white law. In order to have a program that really is successful from a government law type situation, you know, just like a speed limit, you have to set very clear expectations and hold people to those and accountable.
Mm-hmm. All right, Jason.
Yeah, that's a good point. The first thing she said, the first thing I thought when I went into one of those rooms where we viewed nude images of passengers, well, this is such a bad idea. I can't believe this is actually happening because, yeah, like I said, I mean, for the most part, it's a lot of people straight out of high school. Actually, well, yeah, people straight out of high school, et cetera, just viewing nude images out of nowhere. It's a lot of power for somebody to have, and I was kind of shocked that, like, this, you know, workforce of 60,000 people was just suddenly being granted that power. It seemed like a really bad idea. And it turned out it was a bad idea. I knew it was going to be a disaster from almost day one. And that's why I started blogging, actually. To the second thing, yeah, I mean, it's very tricky as far as bureaucracy goes in a big organization such as the TSA making rules. You do have to make some type of black and white rules. Something has to be allowed to go, something has to not be allowed to go. Very true. As Bob just said, from the Pilots Association, I at least think the TSA should definitely roll back most of the regulations, restrictions that it's put in place after 9/11. Most of them can be rolled back. People can keep their shoes on. Should be able to keep their shoes on. People should be able to bring bottles of water through the airport security checkpoint without having them confiscated. In place of that, I think things should be randomly screened, randomly checked, which the TSA already does quite well. That's another thing they do quite well is trying to randomize everything. I believe with random checks of, you know, all these objects such as shoes and bottles of water, jars of peanut butter, I believe that's an adequate deterrent as far as stopping, preventing somebody from trying to, you know, bring a peanut butter bomb through the checkpoint, let's just say.
Did you ever, during your years there, have to encounter somebody who you really thought was a terrorist?
No.
No.
Absolutely. Absolutely not. I mean, if you look at statistically speaking, I mean, you can find all sorts of stuff on this as far as cost-benefit analysis, books on cost-benefit analysis and statistics, statisticians. I mean, the number of terrorists in the world as we define them, I guess, in the U.S., is like so infinitesimal. It's really amazing. Your chances are far better of dying from getting hit by lightning than dying in a terrorist attack. So, I mean, the chances that I would actually have come face-to-face with an actual person who would end up killing people in, you know, what would be considered a terrorist attack, I'd have a better chance of winning the lottery than that actually happening. There are people who seemed as though they fit all the, you know, characteristics of this might be somebody who's a terrorist, and there were a couple tense moments. Somebody wearing a coat refuses to take it off. We were thinking, what's under that coat? They look really nervous. Like, all sorts of alarm bells were going off. But inevitably, in the end, it ended up not being a terrorist situation as far as we would ever know.
So there was nothing under the coat?
What did you say?
There was nothing under the coat?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like, with the individual I'm thinking of, he was just, like, he just didn't speak English and was very confused about what was going on. And that's why he refused to take it off. He didn't, like, understand. He was really confused about what was going on.
Yeah. Thanks, Jenny, for your call. Scott in La Crosse. Hello, Scott.
Hi there, Kathleen.
Hi.
I have actually two contrasting stories here. The first occurred, and I had never been singled out, but I was on a flight getting onto a flight, and there was a woman coming next to me through the system, and this I think one of your authors, young kids right out of high school, was going through her stuff, and she was obviously in quite an agitated state. And he's poking through everything, picking out all these things, and she's carrying a cross and a rosary and a statue of Virgin Mary. And this guy says, "What are you carrying all this stuff for?" And the woman says, "I'm going to my mom's funeral. She just died."
Oh, no.
And you know, she's just this close to falling apart.
Oh.
And this kid is showing zero compassion. And at the very end, and of course, I'm just at the end there putting my shoes on and all that, but observing this going on. And so finally he passes her stuff back to her, telling her she's okay to get on the plane, and says to her, "Have nice holidays."
Oh, my goodness.
And I'm sitting there thinking, the last thing this woman is going to do, believe me, is have a nice holiday. Well, fast forward a couple years, my mom died, and I had her ashes and was booked for a flight to take her ashes out to her home state of California. So you can imagine how I'm looking forward to going through TSA that day.
Right.
And I get up there, and of course, as soon as I had a little, a little urn in there. It was just a little plastic thing to hold it, the ashes. But as soon as my bag goes through, I just see everybody, all the lights are going off, and I'm thinking, I thought this was going to happen. But what they did was they came over and they had swabs, and they swabbed all around the inside of my bag and the urn and everything else, which they explained very nicely were detecting swabs. If they turned a certain color, they would suspect explosives.
Mm-hmm.
And they couldn't have been more professional. They were so nice. They were so, obviously, a funeral is never an easy situation, but these folks, I just came away just thinking night and day that I had been treated very decently. They had been very professional. And now I don't know that the difference there is that it's a few years later or what the situation was, but my opinion did a 180 right there.
Yeah. Oh, I'm glad for you, Scott, because you're emotional anyhow. You're probably likely to yell at the person who's doing all of this if that's what your situation is. Were people brought to task for earlier behavior that Scott talked about, do you think, Jason, or was it just the luck of the draw?
Yeah, actually, I didn't fully answer the last young lady's question, and it sort of ties into this. On the TSA checkpoint, people are, whether they're officially allowed to use discretion and bend the rules or not, it happens every day across the nation, at airports, everywhere. The first individual this young man spoke of, who was sort of rude with the the woman whose mother had just died, kind of insensitive.
Right.
It sounded to me, it sounds like he was like a robot, just following rules.
Yes.
Like almost like an automaton with no emotion, no feelings, just doing his job, like no ability to feel any type of emotion. And the second person, or the second group of screeners, were very kind and caring and understanding of the situation and able to process the entire situation and make it easier on the person. That happens every day at every airport, where there will be one screener who is going to follow every single rule to a T, regardless of what the situation is, and other screeners who will sort of adjust the rules, maybe shorten one part of the screening process, maybe disregard one part of the screening process, on a case-by-case basis. There is discretion exercised. There are at airports across the country, for better or for worse, sometimes for better, as we just, heard, sometimes. And there are people who just follow everything to a T robotically. And of course, I also worked with people who were just generally, quite frankly, unpleasant, not very nice people. I guess you'll get that anywhere. There just will always be an occasional TSA screener who's just not very nice.
Absolutely. Thank you, Scott, so much for calling. We'll take more phone calls in a moment. Our number is 800-486-8655. Our guest is Jason Edward Harrington. He's a former TSA officer, and he's written about his experiences. Actually, he's writing a novel about it right now, but a piece in Politico magazine a couple weeks ago caught our attention. Dear America, I saw you naked, and yes, we were laughing. To you, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go back to phone calls for Jason, and Anita in Gurnee is next. Hi, Anita.
Hi. As a passenger, you know, I've seen some really nice professional agents, but I have to say that when you go from airport to airport, you never know what you're going to get. And so a lot of times the passengers don't know what those TSA agents are going to expect from them. You go through one line, and they want you to hurry up, get your stuff out, do this, do that. And the next one, they're slow as molasses. And the thing is, there seems to be some of them, a lot of them actually, that are very haughty, arrogant. They don't know what courtesy is, and that if they would just, you know, exude a little bit of courtesy, that maybe they'd have a better, you know, better cooperation. But they seem to think they have job security, and I can't figure out for the life of me why, unless they're being underpaid terribly. But I just would like to see the training include, you know, yes, they have to be firm. Everybody has to go by the rules. We get that. And I know some passengers are idiots. I know that. But mostly what I've seen is not that. Mostly I've seen people, they just want to get to their flight. And whatever pass is, you know, whatever you want, just tell me. That's it right there. Tell me, and tell me courteously.
Jason.
Yeah, that's one of the most common things that I would, you know, hear on the checkpoint, which I totally agreed with, that passengers would say is like, can you please state, you know, what you just said, courteous, not to me for the most vast majority of the cases, but can you please state what you just said more courteously? Can you please not be rude? I mean, the most basic dynamic that's at play here is that in order to get fired as a TSA employee, and working for the government as that job is, it's almost like having a union job. It absolutely is. It's really, really difficult to get fired from the TSA in many ways. There are things that you can get fired for, and most of those things, a couple of those things are totally absurd, such as failing an annual recertification test, which has very little to do with what a TSA employee actually does on a day-to-day basis. That will get you fired in a heartbeat. TSA employees hate those tests. Anyway, what won't get you fired as a TSA employee is being absolutely ridiculously rude to every passenger who comes through a checkpoint. Working at the TSA, that was one of the things that I realized was just one of the, you know, biggest things that's wrong with the organization is that, like, look at this coworker of mine who is mean to the public, rude to the public. There really wasn't much of a route for, you know, managers on up to fire that rude person just for being, you know, a not nice screener. Like she said, with job security, TSA screeners do absolutely have job security, even, you know, despite the fact that they're outright rude to passengers in many cases.
How's the pay, Jason?
I believe it's like $37,000 a year right now, starting. Mm-hmm.
That's not too bad, huh?
Yeah, but most TSA employees start part-time. They keep you part-time for the first 2 years approximately, for the most part, and then you go full-time. So
I see.
About half that at first.
And at one point, you worried that maybe writing a letter to the editor of the New York Times might get you fired, but that didn't happen. You want to tell that story?
Yeah. After the underwear bomber, in 2009, somebody tried to bring a bomb on a plane in his underwear, the attempt failed. Right after that attempt failed, the TSA announced that it was going to be rolling out nude body scanners, which, I mean, as I've been saying over and over, you know, on my blog and even right now, I knew was a really bad idea from the beginning. I had a feeling it was. So I wrote a letter to the Times just saying, like, I agree with security experts who are saying that this is a bad idea, rolling these new body scanners out, radiation scanners, out to the airports. And, so I wrote that letter, almost not thinking that it was going to be published, because the New York Times is a pretty big deal. Sure enough, they call me back and say, we want to publish your letter. So then I realized, uh-oh, I wonder if I'm going to get in trouble for this.
Well, I bet you wondered that.
And I started looking into my rights. You know, I have First Amendment rights. You know, I'm allowed to write a letter, you know, expressing my opinion, as long as I'm not making a death threat or, you know, bringing, yeah, there's certain things that you can't do, obviously, First Amendment-wise. But, you know, I didn't hit any of those boxes, check any of those boxes with my letter. My boss ended up talking to me and saying, the next time you write a letter to anyone, run it through the legal department first. Which I thought was kind of absurd. Like, I have a feeling the legal department would say, no, you're not allowed to send this letter out.
Right.
In every case, pretty classic government absurdity. So, she was silent after that, and a couple managers came up to me and actually said, like, what's this I hear about you writing, you know, letters to newspapers? You can't do that around here. You just can't be doing that around here, pretty much. And, yeah, it was pretty much just handed to me, like, keep your mouth shut.
Right.
Don't go expressing your opinions about, you know, what we're doing here.
Yeah. Thanks, Anita, for your call. Gene in Salem wants to know why they don't just hire more dogs if all they're really looking for is explosives.
That's a good question. My coworkers actually, you know, brought the same thing up over and over and over again. I was behind that idea too at one point. If you Google efficiency of canines, TSA canine efficiency, there's been a lot of scientific reports saying that actually the way TSA does actually have a canine program, and experts have analyzed it and taken a look at the canine program, and they've pretty much found that it just actually is not cost effective. Plus, the dogs are never used wisely. At least they haven't been used wisely yet. Basically, every time the TSA has tried to use canines, they really haven't done so effectively yet. Maybe they could do it effectively in the future. But, yeah, I mean, if you punch that into Google, you'll find all sorts of...
Okay.
Damning reports.
Joseph in Franklin, hi.
Hello, yes. I'm glad I hear a program that actually bring my long-term frustrations. I travel, and I travel a lot. Initially, they were telling me this is random, and they started to say selected. The experience is every time, I have a phobia now of airports. I've been in the country 25 years. And I've been very legal. I don't have even tickets, maybe some parking tickets, all what I have. I never had access to any weapon in my life. Yet every time, for the last 5 years, I'm being singled out and put into this gentleman. I don't have anything against the individual of the TSA. They're doing their job.
Mm-hmm.
But they just say, sit in that chair, and I'll sit in that chair in the corner. I cannot move. I cannot make any abnormal eye movement. I am basically indicted, and I'm guilty until they release me and declare my innocence in front of everyone. Next to me, I look for another Muslim. I'm a Muslim myself, and it is like I feel definitely targeted. My daughter, she's 8 years, and so is my mother, my wife and my other family member. Some of them, they start crying. You know, what they're going to do with me? And sometimes they take me to a different room. I mean, you have been doing that for God's sake. If I have something wrong, illegal, just get me in and tell me what I have. You have the NSA knows what's my telephone number. They know my email. They know everything I do. And I'm a health worker myself. I attend conferences. They take me from my team group, and they single me aside. It is definitely. And for the gentleman who say America is safer, this is not true. You know, look at the gentleman who out of outrage he singled out TSA. He's upset about what's going on. I don't condone that. I condemn it. But it is not. It's not. America is not safer. We have because
right.
of American. I mean, because of American, what's going on? The wars are not better in the world.
Yosef, I'm sorry. What's happening to you is not right, and we are out of time. And it's probably a way to keep us thinking about this issue as we say goodbye. Jason Edward Harrington, thank you so much for being with us this hour.
Thank you so much.
Jason Edward Harrington, his blog is takingsenseaway.wordpress.org. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing this hour and to KP for on-air production.